This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. What kinds of books do you remember checking out from the library when you were a kid? Some Ohio lawmakers are worried about the kinds of materials children can access today. Two separate bills aim to penalize school librarians and public libraries if they allow children to check out materials deemed obscene. Today, we're going to talk about those measures and the impact they could have if they become law. Joining me now are USA Today Network Ohio Bureau reporter Jesse Ballmer. Welcome back, Jesse.
Thanks for having me.
University of Cincinnati Associate Professor of Political Science David Niven. Thanks for being here, David.
My pleasure.
And Case Western Reserve University Professor Emeritus of Law, Jonathan Enten. Welcome back, Jonathan.
Glad to be with you again.
UC is a financial supporter of Cincinnati Public Radio. Jesse, as I mentioned, there are two bills that have been introduced related to librarians and the materials that children can check out of libraries in Ohio. Explain what these two measures are and what they would do.
Yeah, so I'll start with House Bill 556, which was introduced by Representative Adam Matthews from Southwest Ohio. His proposal would create a felony for school librarians and other teachers if children access an obscene book or movie or material. And so fifth-degree felony can be punishable up to 1 year in prison and a $2,500 fine. There have been other similar proposals introduced in like West Virginia. I believe Indiana is also looking at something like this. So this is like a criminal penalty related to public school K-12 libraries. The second bill is one that was introduced by Representative Al Catrona from up in the Youngstown area, and it would penalize public libraries by withholding funding from them if a child were to access this same kind of like obscene material, which they define as nudity, sexual conduct, you know, abuse, for example. And so these are two separate bills, but in getting at kind of two separate ways, but the goal would be to reduce access to books that these lawmakers consider obscene.
And Jesse, who determines what constitutes obscene material? How does the state define that now?
Yeah, so looking at the school library bill, they have a list of things like, you know, sex, nudity, bestiality, extreme or bizarre violence, like defecation. So there is a list of things right now. And right now, school librarians are exempt from any sort of penalties for like selling or distributing these quote unquote obscene materials. But this bill would remove them from that list. It could also apply to teachers, but there would be exceptions for teachers, for example, that show Michelangelo or, you know, talk about sex education in the school setting.
And that's the bill that applies directly to school librarians and teachers in public schools, right?
Correct.
Okay. And what about the one that deals with public libraries and whether their funding gets withheld? Does that bill make it clear what the definition of obscene materials really is?
So in the bill, they say nudity, sexual conduct, sexual excitement, sadomasochist abuse in any form. So there is a definition, but I think the concern from opponents of both of these bills is who's making that interpretation? You know, will there be public pressure from individuals who maybe just don't like a book versus, you know, find it particularly harmful? And so that kind of subjectivity of what is obscene could be problematic, those who don't like these bills are saying.
Jonathan, from a legal perspective, what do you make of the definitions of obscene materials in these bills? How have the courts defined obscene materials?
Well, let's back up for a second, because one of the bills, the one that deals with school librarians, does talk about obscene materials, and there is a Supreme Court definition of obscenity that says that you have to take a work considered as a whole, and it has to be patently offensive according to relevant community standards. I think that the Ohio statutory definition of obscenity is likely to be okay. But the other bill is not talking about obscenity. It's talking about material that is, quote, harmful to minors. And that means that some material that isn't legally obscene could be covered by this other bill. The other point to come back to the definition of obscenity, because Jesse mentioned the possibility that somebody might object to Michelangelo's David, for example. Michelangelo's David is not obscene under the First Amendment because it doesn't satisfy the First Amendment requirements that the Supreme Court has laid down. Now, might Michelangelo's David be problematic under the other bill, that is to say, harmful to minors? Well, that's a nice question. But that public library bill has a raft of other concerns beyond the fact that it covers things that aren't obscene. For example, that bill would allow any resident of the state of Ohio to file a complaint about any public library in the state. The bill doesn't require that the person have actual knowledge that the library has material that is harmful to minors. It doesn't even require that the complainant have a good faith belief that the library has material that is harmful to minors. It basically says anybody, I'm in the Cleveland area, I could complain about the public library in Cincinnati, even though I have never been to the public library in Cincinnati. So that's one problem. Another problem is that the bill calls for an investigation into the complaint, but it doesn't say how long the investigation will take, or what process will be what that will be used. Another problem with that bill is that if somehow a complaint against a public library is deemed to be well-founded, that it does have material that's harmful to minors and it's not restricting access in one way or another, the library is going to lose its public funding, which, is a, well, let's just say that between the expansive definition of who can complain and on what basis and the sanction, I mean, this could be a huge problem for public libraries all over the state. There are some other issues, I think, with the school librarian bill that we can talk about as well. I mean, that bill seems to start from the premise that school librarians are a problem rather than a solution, and that we should be suspicious of school librarians. And it also subjects not just librarians, but many teachers in schools, and by the way, not just in public schools or elementary and secondary schools. It covers charter schools, but it also covers public and private institutions of higher education. So we're talking about painting with an enormously broad brush in ways that could invite harassment of teachers and librarians all over the state.
Well, and I want to come back to the public library bill, but even the school library bill, you mentioned painting with this broad brush, going into higher level education. And you talked about David, the famous Renaissance sculpture. But when it comes to art, who defines what's obscene in art or literature? I mean, that could be a bit of a slippery slope, couldn't it, Jonathan?
Well, it could, but the Supreme Court has had a legal standard for obscenity for quite a long time. So whoever is going to make the call is going to have to decide whether the controversial material satisfies that pretty strict First Amendment standard. The problem isn't so much that we don't know what the standard is. I mean, there are going to be hard cases, individual cases. The problem is that if you start from the assumption that libraries are, and particularly school libraries, are full of obscene material, you're basically going to invite harassment of librarians and teachers. And even if they ultimately prevail in whatever process they go through, it's going to take a long time. It's going to be very painful. It might turn out to be quite expensive. And frankly, some teachers and librarians will simply decide it is not worth fighting this battle. We are going to fold. We will either pull materials out that have a good, valid educational purpose, or worse yet, they may decide life is too short to put up with this kind of harassment. I'm going to leave my job. I may stop being a teacher or a librarian, or at least I will stop being a teacher or a librarian in a school district where I am subject to these kinds of bad faith complaints.
We're talking about two proposed bills that would punish school librarians and public libraries if they allow children to access materials deemed obscene. What do you think? Give us a call at 513-419-7100 or email talk at wvxu.org. There's a lot to talk about here. I want to come back to this public library bill that we were talking about. But David, first I want to ask you, why is this legislation being introduced now? What are the politics involved here?
Well, you could understand a lot about Ohio Republican politics by just watching Florida and waiting 2 or 3 years. You know, as Jesse mentioned, these are not bills that are entirely unique to Ohio. This is a kind of thing that's very, very popular amongst a very small set of conservative activists who, you know, fundamentally view, you know, books as a threat and you know, have taken action to it. The sponsor of the bill on criminalizing librarians and teachers is one of the most conservative members of the House. You know, this is the kind of person who's literally spent his life seeking, you know, a full no exceptions abortion ban. He's introduced legislation to abolish the Ohio income tax. So this is a very, very hard right vision of government. And, you know, we've seen that across a lot of culture war issues. They don't start in Ohio, but they get to Ohio. And often what's kind of interesting about Ohio politics is our legislators put just a little bit more, just a little bit of a unique spin on these bills. And the combination of these bills, I think, is really what's notable because, you know, as Jonathan mentioned, it's not just the notion that somebody could get prosecuted or somebody's library could get defunded. It's the self-stifling. That's one of the most important things we've seen in Florida libraries, that schools and libraries have just taken the books off the shelf, you know, to prevent anybody from ever taking the steps that Florida empowers them to take.
Well, David, I assume you're talking here about when you referenced a lawmaker, Representative Adam Matthews, the Republican from Lebanon that Jesse mentioned as the sponsor of House Bill 556. He has said his bill isn't political, that it's meant to protect minors from inappropriate material. Is there any merit to that? Is there a need to better regulate children's access to some of these materials?
Well, I think the most telling thing in the bill right now, Ohio's standards, we already have laws on this subject. Right now, Ohio's standards specifically include an educational exemption. So if you consider the material educational, then it can't be obscene. Representative Matthews' bill removes the educational standard. It removes that protection. So it really is a very significant rewriting of how this works to say that something that is deemed educational is not necessarily worthy of being in the library or being in a child's hand. So, you know, that's the bottom line. We already have standards. You know, as Jonathan referred to, we already have obscenity standards. Jesse referred to, we already have laws. What this is specifically doing is upping the targeting of educators and specifically removing the exemption for educational value as being a defense against obscenity charges.
We'll continue our conversation in just a moment. And later in the program, we'll get summer book recommendations and tips for reading more and more deeply. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're continuing our conversation about proposed legislation in Ohio that would punish school librarians and public libraries if they allow children to access materials deemed obscene. My guests are USA Today Network Ohio Bureau reporter Jesse Balmert, University of Cincinnati Associate Professor of Political Science David Niven, and Case Western Reserve University Professor Emeritus of Law Jonathan Enton. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. I want to come back to this bill related to public libraries. Jesse, you know, a public library has materials for all age groups, from little bitty kids to adults. How does the bill talk about how to distinguish what's available to adults and how to keep kids? I mean, how does that work? The public library is supposed to be for everybody.
Yeah, so the bill says it would require them to hide any material considered harmful from public view. So maybe that's wrapping or covering it or placing it behind a circulation desk. And I would say the public library's counter to that would be that they kind of already sort books according to kids, young adults, adults. And they would also say that there is a role for parents to play in which books their kids read, as far as whether it's developmentally appropriate or perhaps like appropriate in this manner. And so, so the bill would require some sort of like covering or hiding or moving those books.
That seems tricky logistically. I mean, there are adults who should be able to access content that isn't, you know, appropriate for a five-year-old, whether you call it obscene or not. I mean, there are plenty of books that a little bitty kid, it doesn't make sense for them to read, but adults have to be able to get to it, and it's going to be hidden behind a circulation desk in this bill. Is that the idea, Jesse?
I think that's one suggestion or one proposal, and I think libraries would agree with your point that this gets logistically challenging, and or that they do a lot of this already by sorting books into specific sections and, you know, making recommendations based off of like age level and developmental level.
We got a call from Christina, who says she's a proud public school teacher of over 20 years. She could not stay on to go on the air. She says The Frontiersman by Alan Eckhart would be one of the books that would be banned under this proposed law due to its brutality, even though it details what happened to indigenous communities in American history. They should require lawmakers to read all the books they'd like to ban or focus on more meaningful legislation. We also got a call from Mary Jane, who couldn't stay to go on the air. She asks, would the Bible be one of the books included in the ban? The book includes a lot of material that would be considered obscene under this proposed law. That's a provocative question. I'm going to let you tackle that one, Jonathan. Do you think the Bible would be considered material harmful to children?
I'm not sure what the answer to that is, but for what it's worth, to jump back to the school library situation, that bill actually adds clergy to the list of folks who are essentially exempt from that bill. But you know, I do think that's a legitimate question. I'm not sure how it would be answered. One other feature of the public library bill, it's not clear that a public library that had, say, a children's section separate from an adult section would be able to comply with this law, because it looks like the public library would have to make these materials inaccessible, not just to juveniles, but to anybody. I think you have to read the language carefully, but I think it could create some real problems for libraries that say, okay, we're going to put all this stuff outside of a section of the library that smaller children would see. But I think the assumption here is that the public libraries are full of this harmful material. There is, by the way, another provision about that, Lucy, you mentioned about parents may want to have their kids have access to some of these materials. The bill would allow parents to give consent, but it looks like the way it's written that the parents might have to give consent for each individual item that their child might be looking at. And that essentially means that maybe the parent has to accompany the child to the library and monitor the kid because maybe the parent can't just give a blanket consent that says, I'm okay with my child checking out anything that's in the collection. So that's a potential burden on parents beyond the burden on librarians.
One of our producers notes that in public school, she had to get parental permission to read the Bible in an AP English class because of the separation of church and state. So I'm not sure if that's what Mary Jane was referring to, a school assignment for the Bible, or whether it's a public library question, but we wanted to point that out. So, Jesse, how much traction have these bills been getting in the State House?
Yeah, so it's worth noting that these bills were introduced mid-year in the second year of a legislative session where the legislature has been at a historic low for passing bills. And so I think you never know what's going to happen in the last sessions of the year. They call it lame duck for a reason. So it's possible that they could pick up steam, but I think it's hard to see how they would gain a lot of traction before the end of the year. That being said, legislation that's introduced is often reintroduced and comes back.
Mm. And Jesse, do either of these bills address the internet? Because we all know that there is plenty of stuff on the internet that parents wouldn't want their kids to see. Do either of them address internet access to materials that some people might find objectionable?
I believe because the onus is mostly on the libraries, either the K-12 public libraries or the public libraries in the other bill's case, it's more on like physical or, you know, access to books or other types of media that would be provided through those specific venues.
Mm-hmm. David, you mentioned that Florida has had some measures that mirror some of this. There are a number of red states in the country that are considering laws like this or who have passed laws like this. And then there are blue states that have reacted with laws that are an effort to kind of protect libraries. Talk to us about that national landscape, David, and what we're seeing across the country with this.
Well, you know, there really is, you know, a stark divide, and this one may be, you know, one of the most profound, you know, between the states that have very conservative legislatures that have variations of these bills. And the consequence of them is clear that, you know, any rational, you know, librarian or educator is going to be more careful and lean to the side of restricting materials. I mean, you know, frankly, you know, as we're talking about, well, what would a library do with a Toni Morrison novel, or, you know, what would a public library do with these things? The safest thing to do would be to not have it. The second safest thing to do essentially would be, you know, to set the library up penitentiary style so that no one can ever access the materials. And that way, you know, you can never be convicted of it. But to answer your question, you're right that there are other states going in exactly the opposite direction. You know, on the East Coast, you know, states that are passing bills in the opposite direction and, you know, sort of reaffirming the value of libraries. I do think it's really notable to understand the kind of cultural context here. There was a great story a couple of years ago in the Washington Post about efforts to challenge and remove books. And nationwide, they found that a majority of the challenges emanated from 11 people. 11 people were just serially challenging books across the country. And it gives you a little window into the degree to which this is a cultural war question, but the actual cultural warriors, you know, are few in number, but large in voice.
Hmm. Jesse, does this seem to be a priority for Republican leadership? I know you said we're lame duck, but is there, are there a lot of eyes on these bills?
I think to David's point, this is the type of kind of social issue that the Republicans in the legislature could really sink their teeth in and focus on. But we haven't heard from like the Speaker or Senate President saying like, yes, we must pass this bill before the end of the year.
And Jonathan, are there constitutional implications for these bills if they were to become law?
Absolutely. I suggested some earlier, but for example, and this comes back to David's point about a handful of people around the country filing most of the challenges. I mean, anybody in Ohio can challenge materials in public libraries. The process, there's no explanation about the timeline under which complaints have to be handled. We have a fair amount of First Amendment law saying that if there's a challenge, that the challenge has to be handled in an expeditious fashion. The burden of proof has to be on the complainer. Those things are not in the public library bill. On the school library bill, I think there are fewer First Amendment problems because that's couched in terms of obscenity, and we have a First Amendment standard for what constitutes obscenity. But again, part of the concern that comes in with First Amendment considerations is whether we are going to provide an or impose an undue chilling or deterrent effect. David was talking about this earlier as well, that some teachers who might have a perfectly good legal defense to claims that they're violating this teacher bill might say, "Life is too short. I don't want to deal with this. I'm either not going to teach anything that is the least bit controversial, or I'm just not going to teach at all." And those are major losses that these bills don't seem to put any weight on. And I think that's a real problem.
We did get a call from Gail. Gail said this legislation would only continue to hurt educators when public schools are already strapped for cash. Educators aren't paid their worth, and charging them with hefty fines will only keep people away from the profession. That's Gail's thought. Well, I've been talking with USA Today, Ohio Bureau, and I'm sorry, USA Today Network, Ohio Bureau reporter Jesse Balmert, University of Cincinnati Associate Professor of Political Science David Niven, and Case Western Reserve University Professor Emeritus of Law Jonathan Enton. Thank you all so much for your time today. Up next, we'll hear about some fun summer reads and get tips for being a super reader. This is Cincinnati Edition.